to a couple of people who came up and asked me if this was the presentation I was going to be doing right prior to lunch, and I said, yes, it is. And then when I got up to do it, Kirsty informed me that I was doing healthcare training for success. And so I switched it real quick and did the training session. So those of you who left and thought you were coming back to hear the training session, we're not doing that one. We're doing this one. However, tomorrow I am going to be speaking on the client focus track. And there's two sessions called Set Client Service Standards with Your Team, Part 1 and Part 2. That will be almost identical to the session I did yesterday, but it'll be even more detailed about how you can set standards with your team and train your team to the standards, which is a lot of what I talked about in this last session, was setting standards and training your team to those standards. So if you missed that session, come back tomorrow and be part of those sessions with me, and you'll be able to make that up. So how many of you were in all the morning sessions? Raise your hand. Okay, so a large majority of you. Those of you who were not in the session, we just talked a lot about how to recruit the right people, how to get them orientated and trained. And this session we're going to talk about, how do we prevent turnover? How do we get our team members to be loyal team members and retain them as long as we possibly can? Now, I had a woman come up to me earlier who said she'd seen a statistic that shows once a person graduates from college, they will make 11 career changes, you know, in the first, I don't know, 20 years or something like that. So that's phenomenal. That's absolutely phenomenal. So can we retain employees? Yes, I believe we can. I think there are things we can do to prevent turnover. Is turnover going to happen in your practices? Yes, it's going to happen. And so that's just part of the HR frustration that we as managers and practice owners have to deal with. But let's work on identifying some ways that we can prevent turnover and we can retain our people and keep them as long as we possibly can. So you recruit, you hire, you train, and within a year they leave. You just feel like it's just a very frustrating thing sometimes when you go to all this work and effort of getting someone integrated into your team and then they leave. It is definitely a frustration. According to the 2005 survey by Career Systems International, they said the top list for people staying on the job, there were 7,600 respondents. 48.4% said they stay because there's exciting work and challenge. 42.6% said there's career growth, they're learning, and they're being developed in their job. And 41.8% said they love working with great people. So can you say these things about your practice? That you're doing these things? If you're not, then maybe you need to start implementing some of these things in your practice. I had this slide in my last presentation. Do you see the healthcare team as an asset or a liability? Because I think that once we identify the fact that our healthcare team can be a huge asset to our practice, they can become income generators for your hospital. Literally generating income for your practice. So if you invest the time and energy in training them and seeing them as an integral part of the success of your healthcare team, and you see them as an asset and not a liability, they're going to be more loyal to your practice. But many healthcare team members in our profession see their position as a job and not a career. And many times it's because we do not take the time to train them, we're not paying them adequately, and thus they don't see their position as a long-term opportunity, and they obviously leave. And I talked a little bit about this in the last session, is, you know, I go into many, many practices where the veterinarian is in the center of the hospital. And the veterinarian becomes the rate-limiting step to practice growth. And what has to happen is the veterinarian has got to get out of the center of his or her hospital and put the client and the patient in the center and empower the healthcare team to be utilized so that you can deliver excellent healthcare. But many times I see, I told some of you that I'm a daughter of a veterinarian. When I came into my father's practice, he had been practicing for 18 years, 20 years when I came on board with him, and it was a very doctor-centered environment. He had control over everything that was going on in the practice, and he was really at the point of complete burnout. He was ready to leave the profession. because he was trying to manage and stay on top of everything that was going on in his practice. And his practice wasn't growing because he had to be on, you know, had to be involved in every little detail that was going on in the practice. And once he realized, if he surrounded himself with great people, excellent people that had leadership skills and had knowledge and had intellect and had excellent customer service skills, and they were empowered to use their brain and do the things they needed to do, all of a sudden he could take a step back and go on vacation for 2 weeks and not have to come back and have a tremendous amount of fires to put out when he got back. Things seemed to operate more cohesively and consistently without him being in the center of it. So it's you've got to get the veterinarians out of the center of your practice. And maybe it's just not veterinarians in your practice. Maybe it's a core group of people. Maybe it's two or three or four people in your practice that just have all the knowledge, have all the control, have all of the authority in your hospital. Maybe you're in the center of your practice. And you're not the owner and you're not the veterinarian. Maybe you're a practice manager and you're in the center. The goal is that we need to put the client and the patient in the center, and the hierarchy needs to go away in our hospitals. And we need to empower our people and give as much knowledge as we can so that they feel like they are really contributing to the overall success of the practice. So I want to give you guys a pop quiz real quick about client service. These are the five basic elements of client service. You have tangibles, which is the physical appearance of your facility. You have reliability, that's the ability to perform what is promised. Responsiveness is willingness to help and how quickly you get something done for a client. Assurance is knowledge, courtesy, and trust. And empathy is caring, individualized attention. Now, some of you may have learned from these five basic elements. Which do you think is most important to our clients? You had to rate these on a scale from 1 to 5. Which is most important? How many think it's empathy? About 2/3 of you. Does anybody see any others that think it's responsiveness? How many think it's responsiveness? Raise your hand. Okay. Actually, it's reliability. The ability to provide what's been promised. That means be who you say you are and do what you say you're going to do. Consistency in what's being provided. And the second most important thing to our customers is responsiveness. How quickly we get something done for a client. How quickly we respond to a client. How long does a client want to be in a veterinary practice for an outpatient visit? I've been told 18 to 32 minutes. So we have got to get the veterinarians out of the center of our practice, and we've got to put the client and the patient in the center of our hospitals, and that means we have to empower the healthcare team. If you want to retain your healthcare team and have a loyal staff, you start challenging them by giving them as much knowledge as you possibly can, and they're going to stay in your practice. When you develop a vision, I asked this question in the last session. Does your practice have a clear, defined vision that is shared by the entire healthcare team? And when I talk about a vision, I'm not talking about a fancy mission statement that we've matted and framed in our reception area about our excellent customer service and our high-quality care. I'm talking about what does our future state look like in our hospital? And does your team play a role in making that future state become reality? Have they been involved in the process of doing some strategic planning in your hospital, and you've sat down with them and you said, okay, guys, let's brainstorm and let's dream together about what things we need to do to take our practice to the next level. And you get with your team, and your team helps get creative and brainstorm about where we want to go as a practice and as a team. And one of the things I do with the practices I consult is I really focus in on this model of being a client-patient-centered practice. Because when you do that, when people feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves and they're part of a vision that they can take hold of and they can see it and they can feel it and they're committed to it, they're going to be more likely to be motivated to do everything that it's going to take to get there. And so when you put the client and the patient in the center of your practice, Your team's going to be more motivated to do the things that you want them to do. Albert Einstein said, without changing our patterns of thought, we will not be able to solve the problems we created with our current patterns of thought. And I think sometimes we have this mentality of the manual worker versus the knowledge worker. And I think that it comes from a different era. You know, I mentioned this earlier in the morning when I came on board my father's practice. He really saw employees as a manual worker. You know, come in, just do what I tell you to do. Your paycheck is appreciation enough. And I think that people have certain human needs. And I think back in the industrial age and the Depression era when our parents and grandparents were growing up and working in the workplace, they went to work for their basic human needs. What are our basic human needs? Food, water, and shelter. So if they did not go to work, they were going to starve and their family was going to starve and they were going to be out on the streets without anything. Today, is it the same thing? I mean, we could get on welfare, we could move in with our families, we could move with our friends, there's all types of government assistance. I mean, we live in a very, very blessed society, and I could almost guarantee that most of the people that come and work in your practices do not do it just for their basic human needs. Right? Would you guys agree with that? But we still have this mentality of the manual worker, you know, where the manual worker needs the job much more than the job needs them. But as you meet those basic human needs, Abraham Maslow talks about Maslow on management. He talks about hierarchy of needs. So once we meet our physiological needs, then we have the need to feel safe. Then we have the need to socialize with others and procreate. And then we have the need to build our self-esteem. And the highest need in humans is the need for self-actualization. What does that mean? Well, it means that we as humans want to be part of something bigger than ourselves. We want to serve community. We want to serve society. And that's the biggest need in humans. I mean, I certainly, as a consultant, do not travel all over the country and leave my daughter, who used to cry many times when I would leave her, Mom, please don't go out of town, please, for my basic human needs. I mean, I could have stayed in Dallas and done that. But I do it because I have a passion to help this profession. I thoroughly enjoy being able to go into a veterinary practice and help a practice team take their practice to the next level, help them cast a vision of where they want to go and give them the necessary steps to get there. Because I'm meeting that self-actualization in me. Do you do that with your team members? Do they feel like they're meeting their self-actualization in your practices and their job? Or are they just coming to work doing a mundane task day in and day out? How many of you get bored easily when you'd have to do the same thing over and over and over? I do. I get bored very easy. That's why this is a great job for me, because every day is something different. That's why I'm not still managing sometimes, because I got stuck in an office having to push paperwork all the time. So we have to always be looking at, is our team meeting their self-actualization? Do we have a vision that they're working towards, that we're casting that for them on a consistent basis? For 45 years, workers have been saying, pay attention to me, love me, give me something interesting to do, and I will produce. And for the past 45 years, managers have been saying, well, we don't have the money. What I want you guys to start focusing on is developing some knowledge workers in your practice. Get away from that manual worker, assembly line, bean counter in your hospital. And let's focus on developing some knowledge workers in your practice. Now, this is Ruth Ann. Ruth Ann is a registered veterinary technician who actually works in my father's practice. She has been there. She was one of the first people that I hired when I joined his practice as his manager back in the mid-90s. She's still there, and Ruth Ann is a knowledge worker. She has a tremendous amount of technical skills, excellent communication skills. She's extremely loyal. She gives 110% every single day she comes to work. And she helps this practice generate income. Now, what do we have to do to keep Ruth Ann part of this team? Because if Ruth Ann quit Advanced Animal Care Center tomorrow, how quickly do you think she would be able to get a job within a 5-mile radius of that hospital? Like that. So what do we have to do to keep Ruth Ann motivated and challenged in her position? Appreciate her? Absolutely. She needs to be growing. There are three things that motivate people. Fear, incentive, and growth. Fear, well, if I don't do a good job, I'll get fired. Incentive, well, if I do a good job, maybe I'll get a raise and get paid more money. I get a bonus. I might get praised. And thirdly, I'm motivated when I'm growing and I'm challenged and I'm learning. And growth is the number one motivator in people. So are you growing your people? And it doesn't mean, you know, in veterinary practice, you only have so many position titles. So it's not like they're growing up, you know, up a corporate ladder. Like, you know, let's say if you were a Fortune 500 company. But you can grow a client care specialist every month. For 10 years, you can grow them. Because there's so many things that they don't know that they can learn. But it takes making that commitment to do it. So you have to be meeting that self-actualization with your healthcare team. They need to feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves. So what's the climate in your practice? Is it negative? Is it controlling, oppressive, secretive, suspicious, disrespectful, divisive, and political? Or is it empowering, supportive, open, trusting, respectful, unifying, and professional? What type of environment do you have right now in your practice? Because your culture will dictate whether or not you're going to be able to keep knowledge workers. Because they won't put up with it. And when I talk about a positive work environment, I'm not talking about a place that we're skipping around singing Kumbhala and not working. We are. We're working hard. We're working diligently. But it's a positive, supportive climate that's conducive to creative work. It's cooperative. It's free from petty bickering and backbiting and gossiping. Do you have those problems in your practice? I hear it often when I go into practices and I interview the healthcare team. Many times they say, one of my questions, confidential questions I ask is, how is the morale of the team? And many times they tell me it's very negative here. And team members do not want to be in a culture where there's a lot of petty bickering and gossiping and backbiting, backstabbing. Another question I ask is, how is the communication in the hospital? How is the accountability? And those are the three areas that I see greatest issues that are not being handled adequately in practice. The more you open up the lines of communication, the less petty bickering, gossiping, and those types of things happen, because people start to create misperceptions when there's not enough open communication in a practice. So if you're not having ongoing meetings that are inclusive with your entire healthcare team, the more you're going to have that negative culture. Chick-fil-A, I don't know if you guys are all familiar with Chick-fil-A, but it's a great little chicken fast food restaurant, a wonderful organization. And they have a principle that goes like this. Associate yourselves only with those people you can be proud of, whether they work for you or you work for them. So do you have any sacred cows in your hospital? You guys know what a sacred cow is? Let me tell you a little story that'll help define a sacred cow. I was working with a practice on the Northeast Coast, and one of the questions I ask in my confidential interviews is, is there anyone here in this practice that sets a bad example for the team and for the hospital? And some people get really kind of nervous when I ask this question. They're like, you mean you want me to give you a name? And I'm like, yes, I want a name. Is there anyone here? There may not be anyone here, but if there is, I want to know who that is. Is there anyone here whose behavior sets a bad example for the hospital and for the team? In this particular practice, they kept mentioning this one woman, and I'm going to call her Jane. Jane, 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 Jane. Well, Jane was the boarding and grooming manager of this practice. And she had been with the practice for 16 years. And she was abrasive and she was rude. She ran new employees off. She even ran clients off. As a matter of fact, they had charts. They used manual charts. They even had charts with a Sharpie marker that said, "This client does not want to deal with Jane." Can you imagine still having an employee working in your practice where they put that on the chart? And Jane every morning would be at the front desk and she would check in all of the boarding and grooming animals. And so she had a lot of client interface and staff interface. And I mean, each person I would interview, I mean, this just became this reoccurring theme in every interview. Jane, you know, ran this employee off. Jane is very intimidating. Jane is abusive. Jane is hard to work with. She's rude to our clients. She's rude to our staff. And so by the time I got to like the seventh or eighth employee, I asked this question to one of the technicians who had been there 6 years. I said, "Why is Jane still here? Why does she work here? I don't understand. Help me understand." And the technician looked at me and she said, "Well, Jane is like a piece of furniture in this practice. She came here from the beginning and she's not going anywhere. Jane is a sacred cow. We can't shoot the cow. We can't kill the cow because we feel like she's indispensable. So do you have any sacred cows in your practice that continually violate your core values, that are not complying with the vision that you have in your practice? And for some reason, we never hold that person accountable. We let them get away with things." One of the things I do is I believe that there's two ways of resolving that issue. Number one, do you have core values in place and a vision in place? If you don't, you need to get those in place. And give that person an opportunity to thrive in a positive culture. Confront them about it. But after, you know, 3-6 months, they haven't gotten on board, that's when I would sit that person down and say, "You know, Jane, you helped us create this vision. You publicly committed to the core values that we put in place, and for some reason, you don't seem to be getting on board. So you're telling me that you really don't want to be here." And I would let Jane go. Sometimes we have to make those tough decisions. But I have heard over and over in practices, when they got rid of that one negative person in the practice, the whole team's spirits just were lifted. And the positive culture just came back immediately. It's amazing what one person can destroy in a practice culture. So a weak player affects the team in three ways: loss of opportunity, loss of morale, and loss of productivity. And sometimes you need to ask yourself, you know, this may not be someone who's got an attitude problem. Maybe they're not in the right position. And so you as a manager and as a practice owner, you need to ask yourself these questions. Are they out of their league? Are they out of their position? Are they out of their comfort zone, out of their understanding? Are they out of their performance requirements? As a manager, you are responsible for the morale and the culture of your practice. You're responsible for that. No one else. You are. That's what it means to be a leader. You are responsible for the culture of your practice. So sometimes you have to take a step back and say, okay, have I put the wrong person in this position? Or do I just need to let this person go? Have I given them the resources so that they can be all that they need to be in the practice? When you have a vision, a service-oriented vision, people are going to be more loyal to those types of organizations. Look at Boy Scouts of America, for example. Why is it such a successful organization? People devote their time, energy, and money to organizations with a service goal. So if you start focusing on creating a vision that's focused around your clients, serving your clients, serving your patients, and you get your team on board with that, they're going to be more loyal to your practice. Again, how many of you have written core values that is shared with your healthcare team? Maybe a fourth of you. When you start actually defining your core values, we are about integrity. We are about respect. We are about professionalism. Personal accountability. When you start defining your core values, there's spiritual sustenance that can be attained from a job when people's own personal core values and principles are congruent with the company's personal core values and principles. So when you actually define those, now there's a way to hold people accountable on the team, but also people are going to be more loyal because they're like, that's who I am. And I feel proud to be part of an organization that has the same core values that I have in myself. So what is your vision and core values? That's really where it starts. If you want to retain your employees, you want to build longevity in your team, get them on board with a future direction in your practice. Not just, well, I'm just a receptionist, or I'm just a kennel assistant, or I'm just a vet assistant, or I'm just an associate veterinarian. But you get them excited about a direction that you're going in as a practice, and you let them be involved in that process, and they're going to be more excited to come to work every day. And that vision needs to be revisited consistently. And you as the leader have to do that. So the work environment determines the attitude and client service. I mentioned in the last session that Ritz-Carlton has standards of conduct. And one of their standards of conduct is, we are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. Which means the way we treat each other internally is just as good as how we treat our clients externally. Because if there's this facade that we're, you know, behind the swinging doors, we're disrespectful to each other, we don't treat each other with courtesy and respect, and then we're expected to go out and treat clients that way, it's almost a double standard, and your team will not jump on board with that. Have you ever been in a place of business where it's obvious there's a lot of disharmony amongst the coworkers? You've seen it. It's hard not to hide that. So if you create this culture where you're positive and you treat each other with respect and courtesy, then they're going to go out and do that with clients as well. And leadership has to set the tone. You have to anchor and communicate the vision with the healthcare team. Next session, I'm going to talk about the meetings, how to have effective meetings. And one of the ways I think you can keep the vision at the forefront of everyone's mind is list those vision statements and core values at the top of your agenda. Every time you have a meeting, just list them. So it becomes the measuring stick behind every decision you make in your practice. Because the measuring stick of changes that you make in your practice. So when you're having a discussion with your team and you're coming up with a new policy or a new procedure or a new standard in your hospital and someone objects or doesn't agree, then you can say, okay, guys, let's measure this up against our vision statements and our core values. This change, this policy, this procedure, does it measure up to what our vision is? And let them look at it. Let them analyze it. And if the answer is yes, then the reality is, then this change is good and we should be doing it. And if the answer is no, then we shouldn't be doing it. So you're keeping that vision as a leader, you're keeping that vision at the forefront of your team's mind, and they're gonna be more, it's gonna be easier for them to implement change in your practice. You guys struggle with making changes in your hospital and getting your team on board to implement those changes? Sometimes it's because they don't understand why. Why are we changing? I don't want to change. I like things the way we've done them. We've always done it this way. I'm angry that we're changing. Well, many times they get upset because they don't understand the reason behind the change. When you have a clear, defined vision that they're committed to and they share in, now you have a reason behind the change. And it takes leadership to do that. What is leadership? John Maxwell, in his book, The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, he said leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. I have a passion around leadership, but my question to you is, how are you influencing the people you're trying to lead? Are you influencing them in a positive way? Are you influencing them in a negative way? And you influence them by what you say, what you do, how you act around them. And you're not the only influencer. I mean, there's probably multiple influencers in your practice, and you got to identify who those influencers are and get them on your team of implementing your vision. Strong, committed, visible leadership needs to be in place. And I see this is probably the biggest problem I see in practices that I work in, is that we don't have enough leadership within the hospital. I had a practice in the Midwest that I consulted last fall. It was over 50 employees, between 5 and 7 full-time equivalent veterinarians. And the first day I interviewed 25 people, and this reoccurring theme over and over and over. This practice did not even have a full-time hospital director. They had 2 part-time administrative people who were there periodically, and then they had the owner of the practice was only there about 20 hours a week. And the team members kept saying over and over and over, we don't have anyone to help us solve our problems. We don't know who our manager is. There's no accountability. There's no communication in this practice. If you want to have a loyal team and you want to have a team that's motivated, you don't want to lose your team members, you need to develop some leaders in your practice. And leaders is not about the position. It's not about a position of authority. It's about implementing change and getting people excited about a vision of where you want to go. So again, the elements of a client-patient-centered practice: set standards with a strong emphasis of meeting the needs of your clients and your patients. Train your healthcare team by sharing the knowledge and empowering the team in order to increase your capacity for service. Develop a culture for client service. Have customer service meetings. Instead of staff meetings, have client service meetings. And you want to involve everyone, everyone in the process. This is where you set your standards and your core values. I'm a big advocate of weekly meetings. I think there's so many things that go on a weekly basis in your practice. If you could just spend a couple of hours a week working on your practice versus in your practice, you're going to be able to retain your people. And you get everyone involved in the process with these meetings. According to RHI Management Resources, the 2 top mistakes that managers make with their people, 61%, the number one mistake is there's a lack of communication between management and staff. And 19%, there's a lack, people do not feel recognized and praised for the work they do. Weekly meetings is an excellent forum to resolve these 2 issues. Communication lines open way up when you're meeting with your people every single week, everyone on the team. And I've implemented this in small practices, and I've implemented it in large practices. I have 1 client in Washington, D.C., 100 employees, 20 veterinarians. They're open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They do general practice, critical care, and specialist. And they have meetings every week. They have 1 at lunch and 1 at dinner every Friday. And everyone's required to attend 1 of the 2 meetings. And it's a great way for them to keep the lines of communication open and to develop these team members so they're growing and they're being developed and they're being trained. So a client-patient-centered practice is a win-win. I'm going on time. For the client, the patient, the healthcare team, the doctors, the practice owner, and the bottom line. Questions? I've got a few minutes. Yes. And I think that's where accountability comes in. I mean, we talked about this morning about recruiting the right people. You know, and so I think it's probably 1 of 2 issues. Either 1, you don't have the right people on your team. They're not really committed to seeing this, of being in a career position. Maybe this is a stepping stone to move on to something else. They're a part-time, you know, they're a part-time employee or they're a student, and they don't really see this position as a career, and so they're not motivated. I think people with low self-esteem, I think that's probably the majority of the people in this room. We all have our baggage in our life that causes us some dysfunction in the workplace and how we see ourselves. And that's where leadership comes in. Because I can give you 1 example. I had an employee when I was managing, who came in to apply for a kennel assistant position. Her name was Andrea. Andrea had worked as a cashier at a grocery store, or maybe a sacker. She had been at that grocery store for 5 years. She came in. She was a very shy, quiet girl, but I liked the fact she had stability in her previous work history. We brought her in, and every day I would go back there and look at the work she had accomplished, and I would say, Andrea, wow, this is amazing. I've never had someone clean our kennels the way you clean them. This is just wonderful. You do an exceptional job. Thank you so much. We are so happy to have you here. And as each day when I continued to nurture her self-esteem, you know, Andrea just came alive over a period of time. She would come up and she'd say, you know, is there anything else I can do for you? And I said, yeah, absolutely. I've got all kinds of things I can give you to do. And so I just started delegating more and more responsibility to Andrea. And over a period of time, she became more cognizant of her personal appearance. You know, she wasn't big on fixing her hair or wearing makeup. And then all of a sudden, this new Andrea came alive. And she started fixing herself up. And, you know, within a period of 2 years, she became, you know, a very skilled veterinary assistant and was an integral part of our team. Now, if I had just left that girl in the back and ignored her and never talked to her and never interacted with her and just left her back there alone, like we do often with kennel assistants, do you think she would have thrived to that place? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But I think as leaders, we have to develop our people. And I think that we can build their self-esteem, but we have to have faith in them when they fail. We need to be able to understand them and connect with them and nurture them to a place where they can grow into more in their current position. Does that help? Excellent. Those of you who did not hear that, basically what she said is that we need to make sure that when we do elevate someone in another position, we need to don't make an assumption just because they've been there for a long time, they have all the knowledge. We need to put resources in their hands so that they can be all that they need to be in the position. And I think that is a huge travesty. We put people in positions of authority or in management or supervisor roles and responsibilities, but we do not give them the resources so that they can thrive in that position. And it's, you know, and then we bring them in and sit them down and tell them, you know, why have you done such a lousy job? When in reality, we weren't the right leader for them and equip them and give them the resources so that they could be empowered and they could be enlarged in their position. And so really, it's not their fault. It's our own fault as managers and leaders. Yes. She said, how many managers do we need to have in our practice based on, you know, their 24-hour hospital? How many employees do you have? About 45 employees. I think it really just depends on, you know, the size of your practice. You know, 45 employees. I mean, I'm a firm believer in sharing the load of managing and supervising people. And you need to have create an organizational chart. I would see in that practice you have the owners or the board of directors or the partners, and then below that you would have like a hospital administrator. And then below the hospital administrator you would have a leadership team or a management team that would be responsible for the different departments in your practice. And then if you have different shifts, like you have a night shift, then you need to have a leader that oversees the night shift, and you need to have a leader that oversees the day shift in both departments. And then they meet together, but they report to the hospital director. Because the hospital director cannot oversee and lead every single thing that goes in a practice of that size. You need to have a management team that you hold accountable and that reports to the hospital director. But I'm a firm believer in having some sort of management team or leadership team in place or team leader that can be held accountable for leading that team. But they need the resources and skills to be able to lead. I mean, I was talking to someone earlier this morning who just got put in a management position. She said, I got thrown in, and she's trying to lead her team, but yet she's also a full-time technician. Okay, how do you do that? You can't do that. You can't, if you're overseeing the entire technical team, you're the trainer, and you're implementing new systems and processes, and you're being a full-time technician, it's impossible. And so practice owners and hospital administrators, you need to understand that if you're going to put someone in a role where they're doing managing and they're supervising and they're training, then they need to do that full-time. Allow them to do that. Other questions? Yes. Well, if you hear it, you know, I think when you hear gossip firsthand, you need to nip it in the bud immediately. And I think I'm going to talk about employee discipline, but confronting, we are horrible in this profession about confronting people. I don't know why that is, but we just want to sweep things under the rug and pretend they didn't happen. But we need, as managers and as leaders, we need to hold people accountable. So when we see gossip, number one, we don't jump in and participate, which can be very hard sometimes because, you know, let's face it, the majority of our profession are female. And I know guys like to gossip too, but women, we're... So you have to not participate in that. That's the first thing, because you have to set a good example and not participate in that gossip. And number two, when you hear gossip going on, you need to just speak up and say, guys, this is not a productive conversation. Let's only have conversations that are productive. You don't know if that really happened, and you know that's really not your concern or business for us to be discussing that. Also, I think having it in your written standards of conduct, if you have it written as part of your standards that we do not gossip and have, you know, petty bickering and things like that, then you can hold people accountable for it. Say, guys, this is not part of our standard that we have these types of conversations. I think people gossip when there's a lack of communication in the practice. When you're having a lot of closed-door meetings in your hospital, there will be gossip going on because people just start talking. What are they talking about? They're talking about me in there. Oh, what are they doing? Oh, they're going to change this. They're going to be changing that. And so people just start... I mean, the thoughts just run wild and the misperceptions run wild when you are having too many closed-door meetings and not enough inclusive meetings with the entire healthcare team so they're in the loop of what's going on in your hospital. So those are some of my suggestions. Anyone else have any other suggestions? Yes. She said they have it on their performance appraisal evaluation that comments about employee gossip and unproductive conversations. Yes. Excellent. It's good. Yes. And we're going to talk a little bit more about confronting, not the next section, but the last session. I'm going to talk about how to confront employees effectively and hold employees accountable. So, but I agree with you 100%. Okay. I'm done. Okay, I have 4 minutes. So I finished a little early. Yes. Good for me. She said, I work in a 24-hour facility, and it's like pulling teeth to get people to come to meetings. I believe in mandatory attendance. Because you are not going to get... I think you need to have, number one, do you have a clear, defined vision that everyone shares in and is committed to? Yeah, I would require it. She says, we have a once-a-month receptionist meeting, and no one will come. Because I think it should be a requirement. It's mandatory that they come to that meeting. And I'm going to talk about meetings in the next session, so we can go into that in more detail. Thank you guys so much. You've been very attentive. I'll see you in 15 minutes.